Well, let's see. I got up. I went to bed last night at 1 o'clock. I tried to stay up so I could sleep all through the night. Those of you who travel know how it is when your clock gets turned around wrong. And so I woke up at 2 a.m. and had breakfast. Granola and the whole thing, soybeans, all that I eat, you know, in the morning. By 6 o'clock, I was ready for coffee break, so I had a bowl of chocolate ice cream and a cup of tea. And so I have no idea what time it is right now, but if I'm a little punchy, why, that's, I'm a little punchy, that's the point. I don't quite know how to give a trip report. I haven't given one for so long. I was kind of stunned when Al told me that Bob Stevens wanted a trip report. I tried to think back. I don't think I've given a trip report since, I think, 5 years. You know, you go and go and go and back and forth. And so I feel kind of an honor. I'm really glad to give a trip report. I don't know. I've taken so many trips and have never told anybody about them, but... So I really appreciate coming over and sharing with you because the Lord did give us a wonderful time. As you know, Virginia joined me after the first month, and that was a tremendous blessing, of course, for me. I left on December the 27th for Honolulu and stopped to see Cease Davidson and that crowd. And we had a rally while I was there. You always have a rally when you're in Honolulu with Cease Davidson and his gang. And this time it was just the key people. Now that means that there were 100 people there. If it would have been the fringe contacts and one and all, it would have been 100 people. It doesn't matter who it is with Cease Davidson. Whatever you have 100 people. And it's the same 100, you know. You say, I want to get with the key, right, have 100 people there. I want to get with the new troops, right, 100 people there. And you look out and it's always the same bunch. Except when they rotate, you know, out to the Far East or something. But it's always a challenge for me to be with Cease Davidson. And those of you who know him know why. Cease is a servant. And it's just a phenomenal experience to be around that guy. Just to observe his life. There's nobody that I know that's like him. He's just a servant of God. And as you know, well, maybe some of you don't know, but the trip I took just before this one, we left it was only about a month long, it was in September, to the Orient, where we visited Taiwan and Korea and then Okinawa and Bangkok and so on, Guam. I took Cease with me on that trip. And we had so much fun together. I don't think I've ever traveled with a guy that I had more fun with, so we had a terrific time. So on this one, I was going to touch down in Pango Pango on the way into to Auckland. So I said, Cease, I'd like to go along to Pango Pango. He said, why not? You know, so Cease went with me to Pango Pango, and we went down, and Pango Pango is, if I were, you know, going to start a navigator work anywhere in the world, it would be Pango Pango. The ocean is like a warm, giant, big, hot bathtub. It's like a Japanese ofuro, you know. You just get in that ocean, and it's hot, hot. This was their winter, you know. And it was just steaming hot. So I laid out in the ocean for 2 days. And Cease can't take quite that much sun. He got burned to a crisp. He came back, you know, peeling, and his nose red, and everything was peeling off him. But I loved it. So I got with him, his gang, the one night I was there, and preached to him on the assurance of salvation. And if time permits, I'll tell you why I preached on that. Then we left from there, went down to Pango Pango, and then I split from Cease. I went on down to Auckland, where I continued to turn my clock around for a little while, and then went on into Palmerston North, where Massey University is located, and that's where we had our first conference. John Crawford running conferences down there. And those of you that know John know that we had a very smoothly, finely run conference. Everything was in order. Everybody knew what his job was. Everybody was right on top of the thing, you know. It was click, click, click from the time we arrived to the time we left. But the people felt served. They felt relaxed. You know, it was a tremendous time for the people. But John's gang, they snap to. They do it right. You know, they're right there. And he's got quite a thing going with his little gang there in New Zealand. I think probably one of the sharpest guys that I met on the trip was a young minister that looks to John for his spiritual leadership, a young guy named Stephen Turner, and had a long time with this fellow Stephen. There were about, I guess I mentioned, 750 people at this conference for a week. And I was a little afraid of the conference because I'd gone down there in 1967 where the Lord really gave us a very wonderful time together during those days. And they mustered everybody they could find over there in New Zealand. I mean, they got people that hardly even knew their names. And of all they could gather, there were less than 100 people, probably 60, 70, 80 people like that. And we had a warm, rich little time of fellowship. Well, now I hear there's going to be 750 people. And I thought, oh, well, you know, things are going to pot. It'll be cold and icy and big crowd and no fellowship and no warmth. But that was not the case. God gave us a very warm spiritual time with these people, just a blessed time. And I'm sure it was the result of the prayers of many of you who were praying for this, but also that gang down there. They really pray. And the Lord gave us a good time there. Then I went up from there over to Canberra, which is the capital of Australia, and had a conference down there at the university. 450 people there. And here again, it was the same experience. In 67, a very small little, you know, happy time with a few people. And now I hear 400-500 people are coming, and I was a little afraid, well, it's going to, you know, be just another big crowd. But it wasn't. Very, very warm time. Then we went back to New Zealand. I went back to New Zealand with a plane load of Australians, and we went over there to get involved in what was called the Operation Build-Up. Operation Build-Up was in connection with the Commonwealth Games. And the Commonwealth Games is I think they're held every fourth year. All the countries that belong to the British Commonwealth come together, sort of their Olympics. And I think it's from those that they kind of conclude who's going to be going to the Olympics 2 years later. Because they hold it, you know, those years in between. And so there were two programs going. The Navigators program, and then there was a church program over here. So while we're up at Massey University, Jim Chu got with me and said, we'd like to have you mostly involved in the church program. And we'll sort of take care of the Navigator program. Well, I lost the victory on that, you know, momentarily. But I lost the kind of the joy bells. Because I thought, why do these guys get to have all the fun, you know, the warmth, the fellowship with the Nav gang? And I'm over here with this crowd over here that, you know, we won't know any of them. It won't be any fun. It won't be any fellowship. It won't just be a bunch of strangers. And I kind of got a little agitated by the fact that they're sending me off to that crowd while they're over here all having this nice, warm, happy fellowship. We had 150, 200 people in this operation build-up. And then over here were 850 kind of Jesus people types. You know what I mean by that? They're sort of excited and, you know, turned on, and they're young and fiery and all that goes with that. Well, it turns out that this Games Christian Outreach, they're going to meet like this, and there's going to be 800 of them, but there were actually more, 850-something. They're going to give them training in evangelism, then they're going to send them out, and they're going to be all over these places where these people came in from all over the area to evangelize these Commonwealth Games and all that goes on. And they had expected a bunch of big wheels to come. Well, one thing led to another, and every big wheel that they expected didn't come. They kept getting letters saying, sorry, we're not coming for this reason, that reason, or the other reason. Well, I didn't know anything about all this. But in a place like that, if you're from overseas, you're sort of a big wheel, see? So I became the big wheel in this operation. And the upshot of this whole business was they turned that whole business over to me. And I got about 5.5 hours with this crowd to talk to them on evangelism. Well, that did two or three things. One, there was a lot of rather lively, loose, lighthearted, no depth leadership in this crowd that was there. So all the music was handled by this crowd. And they'd get them singing and dancing in the spirit, you know. The song leader. Have you ever seen a song leader dance in the spirit while he led the singing? Well, they were dancing in the spirit, you know. They're up there sort of dancing around, and the kids are all excited, and they're all singing and hooping it up, and he's dancing in the spirit, and they're going back and forth. Well, I'm a thoroughly brainwashed, old, stodgy navigator, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking, now, you know, how do you cope with a thing like this? So after they'd finished dancing in the spirit and singing in the spirit and doing everything else they could think of to do, well, then it came my turn. So I remember the first time I thought, well, here we go. So I kept jumping up into the pulpit, you know, I hollered, isn't it great to be a Christian, you know? And they all, yeah, yeah, you know, it's great to be a Christian. Great to be a child of God. Amen. You know, man, they're thinking it's great to be a child of God. Let's stand up and praise God. So they're all on their feet, you know. So I'm leading them in prayer, and they're praising God, and I'm praising God, and we're having ourselves a prayer meeting. And then they sat down, and so I gave my testimony. Just so I thought, I'll introduce myself to you, you know, because I was going to have them the whole time. You know, I'm about the only one they're going to ever hear in this. They're supposed to hear all these people, and I'm it. So I gave my testimony. Well, by the time I'd finished my testimony with this crowd and gave them a little, you know, some stories and so on, they were really with me. I mean, the Lord really knit our hearts. So I had far more fun with this 850 turned on young crowd over here than I had with the navigators, you know. I mean, far more. So every meeting, it was a different type of a thing, you know, some new song leader up there going at it. But then the way it worked out, they had the music and I had the message. And, you know, and it was just, there it was. Well, that did another thing. It not only gave these kids some really solid Bible teaching, as you know, the sort of thing that we sort of emphasize, but it also won a lot of public goodwill with the churches of New Zealand. Because they had been expecting all these people to come and help them in this. See, they set the thing up, organized, got all those kids there, and then all these other groups bombed out. So the navigators kind of came in and pulled that baby out of the bag for them. And they recognized that. They sensed that. And they were very, very appreciative. And I'm getting letters now from different ones down there just expressing thanks for what the navigators were able to do for the churches and how we were, you know, we didn't fail in our commitment. Every time I'd hear from Jimmy Chu, he'd say, by the way, Leo, you've got one more session, you know. So that became a kind of joke between us, you know, one more session. But I don't know how many times I preached. I think I preached 2 and 3 times a day for a month and a half without a break. And it wasn't all that tough, you know, but I mean, that's kind of a project. Especially when a lot of the same people are every time. You can't just repeat the stories. You know, you got to think up new stuff. And you know, I told them more than I know the first, you know, 3 or 4 sermons. And I had just had to kind of make up stuff as I went along. But and then, praise God, after a month, Virginia showed up. Oh, that was, you know. Oh, Virginia and the Queen of England came on the same day. And I was really excited. And by this time, they'd stuck me out in a motel out near the airport because we were going to be there for, you know, another 3 or 4 days. So we got to see the Queen of England. You know, standing there, and here the Queen came by, and Duke of Edinburgh, isn't that his name? Duke of Edinburgh. And then their son, the Prince Charles, and then behind them, Anne and Mark, the new couple, and, you know, waving. And, oh, wow, it was sort of exciting. And the whole city almost turned out for that. I mean, just lined the streets. That was a big deal. That was kind of a big deal for me. I had never seen a queen, you know, before, so I was kind of excited about it. And the anticipation, you know, the excitement, you know, you're supposed to stay behind the rope, right? You know, well, nobody wanted to stay behind this rotten rope. Everybody getting, you know, and pushing the rope, and the cops coming and pushing everybody back. And this rope sort of became the bane of our existence, but nevertheless, we're supposed to stay behind the rope and not get in too close and everything. But you could just sense that tremendous excitement that was, you know, anticipating this event. Well, I couldn't help but think of that verse, you know, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. And I thought, you know, the Queen is coming. You know, a big deal. I mean, really. Well, the King is coming. And as I understand that verse, when it talks about, you know, looking for that blessed hope? The idea is looking with sort of eager anticipation, sort of expectantly, just with real expectancy, sort of on the edge of your seat, kind of pushing against the rope, kind of just, you can hardly wait. And my own heart was smitten on that as I stood there, you know, in this hot Australian sun waiting for the Queen of England to go by. And I was thinking, that's not really the way I am in my outlook toward the second coming of the Lord. I mean, the King is coming, see. I mean, that is a fact. And there's that scripture verse. And it was a living example to me of what our spirit should be like as we think about the Lord's return. To see all those thousands upon thousands of people lining the airstrip out there. I mean, they let them in, you know, the air, and then all out the gate, and then down this street as far as you can see. You know, they got their babies and they're holding them up, you know, and the tremendous anticipation. They know the Queen was coming. Well, that was just one little thing that I began to think about. The King is coming. Well, the game's ended. Scores and scores and scores of people saved. I wouldn't begin to try to tell you how many people were converted through our program there. But there were scores and scores and scores. This morning I was trying to jot down what I was supposed to say here. And I put one on the back of this letter from the guy that directed this church program, you know. And he's telling me here about cases of young converts meaning restitution, others going to the police where they've broken the law and giving themselves over, whole families brought to Christ, athletes from overseas have accepted Christ as Savior, you know. I mean, just a tremendous working of the Spirit of God during these Commonwealth Games. And it was just a treat for me to be in on it. And our own gang, of course. Now, the Navigators weren't supposed to do evangelism. We were supposed to do the follow-up. Well, you get this many people together, you know, and you drop a hint now and then to them, you know, because I was preaching to them as well as this other bunch. I had this, you know, 2- and 3-ring circus going. And, you know, you'd kind of give a little word to the... So they were all out, too, you know, every now and then, evangelizing. In fact, the day that New Zealand won the gold medal in the 10,000-meter race, Dick, I forget his name now, who won it, we're all inside shouting for the guy, you know. I mean, just excited about it. I mean, he beat the fastest man in the world, this New Zealander did. And 10,000 meters, that's a long race. And, you know, you kind of get involved in it. And you can see the guy edging up and edging up and edging up. And, you know, and pretty soon he passed the guy and the place went crazy. It was kind of a outside insane asylum is what it turned out to be, you know, toward the last lap there, you know. The place going wild. Well, we all got back to chow that night, and it turns out that some navigator kid from up north in New Zealand had, you know, no, it wasn't New Zealand, Australia. He wasn't all that interested in the race, so he went out here to just talk to spectators outside the Queen Elizabeth Park and led a guy to Christ the very minute that this guy crossed the thing. You know, you could tell by the cheers, this guy out here was repenting and receiving Christ. So I thought, outside the park, the angels of God are all keyed up and shouting, you know. You know how it is, you know, the angels all rejoice when one sinner repents. So here are these angels outside all excited and hollering. Inside, we're all excited and hollering. And now today, I can't even remember this guy's name that won that race. Transient crown, see. That fading leaf that they put on the head, you know, how the Bible talks about that. But one kid outside here, you know, sitting out faithfully under a tree somewhere, leading a guy to the Lord at last. See, that's the thing that will last. And that's what happened down there. Tremendous excitement about the games, and there should have been, because they were well handled and well done, and God used that as a setting, though, to accomplish His work, the thing that's on His heart, namely seeing all these people turn to Christ. Well, then we went for 2 days back to Sydney, where we had a couple days with Chuck and Nancy Stripmatter, and Franklin and Deanne Elliott. And, of course, we saw the whole, you know, Australian bunch and New Zealand bunch, and everybody passes greetings around. So if you know all those people down there, why greetings from them there? They wanted me to pass their greetings. Harvey Soderholm doing his usual tricks. Some of you probably know Harvey, but he showed up from Canberra at the conference, you know, wearing a blue T-shirt with sort of a surrealistic wheel on the front. You couldn't tell what it was. you know. And all of his gang, the whole crowd, all had this wheel on the front of them, you know, this blue shirt with this thing, and finally we figured out it was the wheel, and they're really excited, that little gang that came up with Harvey, because you know how Harvey can create excitement. 2 days there just sleeping in New Zealand, and then, I mean in Australia, and then we went to Indonesia. Indonesia is one of the few mission fields where the navigators operate. The navigators have many overseas works, as you know, but New Zealand, I mean, Indonesia is a mission field. In every sense of the term, this Indonesia is a real, live mission field. So we landed, and because of some confusion and dates on the part of the gang over there, well, we could only stay with them for 3 days, so we couldn't get up to Bandung and back. So Jim North had arranged for a staff conference in Jakarta, out on the little, out by the water. They had just come back from the island of Roti, R-O-T-I. Now, those of you who know your geography know that Indonesia stretches from New Guinea over here, half of New Guinea, clear around to the other side of Malaysia. It's the fifth largest nation in the world. And I don't have any idea how many islands there are. John, do you have how many islands? 3,000 islands and makes up this nation. Well, they had gone to one of them, the island of Roti, and they had come back just a few days prior to our arrival, and they were wiped out. They were ready to be fed. Well, I'd had 2 days sleep in Sydney, so I was ready to go again, you know. So it was 3 days there with the staff. Everybody there but Roy Robertson. He was over in India doing a little recruiting for the TEL program. But Phyllis and the Ladners and all the people that are there, and plus a few guys from the team were down, and we had a staff conference 3 days. And they were in need of some spiritual food and blessing, and I had had these 2 days sleep, and so it was a really key time with that staff. And then one night, a young man named Badu gave a trip report, and I had my little blue thing with me, so I quickly jotted down some of the things that he told about their trip to Roti. And let me just share with you a highlight or two of what these guys did when they were over there. Badu, by the way, is one of the guys that they work with up at ITB, the university there in Bandung. Young Indonesian. Jim, the first time I was introduced to him was back in, I think, 1970, when I went through there for a week or so. And Jim North explains that this guy will make a great missionary because he's got missionary blood in his veins. Turns out his grandfather, I think it was, ate a missionary or something a few years ago. So Badu is the son of this guy, or the grandson. But Badu, the Lord provided a plane for him to go over, an MAF plane, and there were two miracles that happened. One, the rain stopped so they could get the plane landed. And secondly, there was a cloud opened up so they could see the ground and find a place to land, because you know there's no towers, and you just kind of find a place to set the thing down, and then you set it down. And so the Lord provided both, not only an opening in the clouds, but an opening there where they could land this airplane. And they found people very eager to listen. And the amazing thing that they found there in Roti was that when you tell people to do something, they would actually do it. It wasn't, you know, you explain the principle from Scripture, and then they go off and think about it or pray about it or forget it. But they just go do it. That was the thing that characterized these people. They were there with the average group. They were there with them for 7 days. And in most cases, the people memorized 8 verses in these 7 days. That was their assignment, to memorize these 8. And they would listen to them for 4 hours. They'd sit around for 4 hours while these guys would preach to them. And like if they'd give them the bridge, and they'd go say, okay, now go tell the bridge. So they'd write down the bridge, and they'd obediently get up after their 4-hour session, go out and tell it somebody. I mean, that's just the way these people were, and this gang were quite excited. And Badu said that in his personal experience, more and more, God is fulfilling Jeremiah 1, 5 through 10 in his own life. Turns out that this guy, Badu, has prayed over every island of the nation of Indonesia. 3,000 islands. He's prayed over every island and asked God to do a work in each one of these places. And he felt that this was the beginning of the fulfillment, see, of these prayers. Jeremiah 1, you know, I made thee a prophet to the nations, and say now that I am a child, and so on. but go. He's prayed over the over Indonesia, island by island. And then when they left, by the way, they left them a program, a 6 months program for these people to do. And the first 2 weeks is on the assurance of salvation. The second 2 weeks on the assurance of victory. Third, assurance of forgiveness. Fourth, you know, the assurance of provision and the assurance of whatever and all these. And then the verses of the TMS and 2 weeks on each one. And then they left them a profile of what it's supposed to look like after 6 months. And then they're going to go back after 6 months and see, you know, how they do and follow up on the thing. Help them grow. Left them a profile. The way they got there, a pastor who's kind of over about 100 churches over there had invited them to come over somehow. And they met with government officers. They met with the mayor of the city. They met with police officers. They met with the principal of the school. They, you know, and every one of these people will do what you told them to do. For instance, one of these places they went in, they had this celebration where two cities came together. And this city came in, and it was some kind of a folk celebration of some kind. And there's all this, you know, hoopla. Then the mayor is supposed to make a speech. So the mayor stood up and gave him the bridge, you know. I mean, that was his assignment. You'd go tell the bridge to somebody. He said, odd, opportunity to give the bridge. So he stood there and gave the bridge to the people that, you know, came. And that was kind of a blessing to them when to see the mayor doing that. One man heard that Audi, the three of the guys that I remember who went were Heinrich, Audi, and Badu, and there's some others that went. I can't remember their names. But one guy heard that Audi, the servant of the Lord, is coming to Roti. He heard that. Somehow the word had gotten passed that the navigators are coming and that Audi. Now, if you can see this guy, Audi, you know, this little guy, you know, ordinary looking little soul here. Audi, the servant of the Lord. So this guy sat down, got a piece of paper, and wrote down every sin that he's ever committed in hopes that he would be able to meet Audi, the servant of the Lord, and present these to Audi, and Audi could forgive his sins. So he diligently sat down and wrote out every sin that he could remember. And when Audi showed up, he was so excited to meet Audi, the servant of the Lord, and he went and presented his list of sins to Audi. And, of course, Audi led him to Christ and gave him the assurance of his salvation, 1 John 5:11 and 12. Tore up the paper, and the guy went away rejoicing. By the way, on this little island, I think there's, I was going to tell you the number of people there. I think it's 85,000 people on Roti. There's one doctor and one midwife. That's it. So there, one of the guys that came with them from Bandung is a medical student. Well, now, to these people, a medical student, that probably means, you know, a PhD from Harvard or something, you know, a graduate. They don't know the difference between this and that. A medical student, something had to do with medicine. They would follow this guy around. One guy came, and he'd been having stomach problems for, you know, months, see? So he heard this medical man is coming, you know. So he came up and presented himself to this young med student and explained to him that his stomach hurt, you know. So the guy, you know, what do I do? So he reached over and touched his stomach, you know, thinking maybe I can... And the guy said, oh, thank you, and walked off, you know, thank you. Praise God, you know, his stomach healed. I mean, you know, when you mix the witch doctor and medicine and all that stuff in your mind, you know, and that's the way you're raised, you don't know what's supposed to happen. Medicine man, that's medicine man to come there, so. Well, over 500 people made decisions during, I think, the 13 days or the 2 weeks they were there. They preached the gospel in every grade school, every junior high, and every high school on the island. Every one of them. Jim North went to one place where they combined two high schools. So the people came and they sat. So Jim stood up and gave them the bridge, explained the bridge to them, you know, explained the gospel, and then said, okay, now how many of you want to receive Christ? Well, they looked at him with kind of a quizzical look, you know, and Jim thought, I'm not getting through. So he went over, you know, I got 4 hours, there's no hurry. So he went over it again, you know, and explained the gospel, explained the bridge in detail, how to be saved, what you must do to receive Christ. They all sat there, you know, with kind of that incredulous look, you know, that quizzical, Jim thought, not getting through. So again, see, went over it, explained it in great detail. So finally, you know, he said, now how many of you want to receive Christ? So finally, one young man in the group stood up and said, sir, we're confused by your question. We all want to receive Christ. That's why we've come today. We've all come here to receive Christ. That is why we have come to this meeting. I mean, we don't understand why you're asking us this. You know, you dumb American come over and ask these stupid questions, you know. Why do you think we're here? I mean, what else is there to do, you know? We've come to receive Christ. And that was the kind of response that they got all over the place. Just people so eager to receive Christ and to have their sins gone. I mean, people writing out lists of sins in hopes that somehow he could find a way to have his sins forgiven, you know. that kind of gets to me. I'm sorry, but... Well, anyhow, one minister was there. He's a minister of six churches. He's been preaching for 28 years. And Badu led him to the assurance of his salvation. And so he took Badu with him to all six churches. I mean, they forded rivers. You can't imagine, you know, to hear him tell about this, what it is to get around that place. But they were fording the rivers and going around. And this minister went to all six churches, stood up in front of his congregations, introduced Badu, explained that he had led, you know, gotten the assurance of his salvation now, confessed his lacks to the congregation, the fact that he'd failed them for 28 years, had not been able to explain to them how to be saved, but from now on he would know how to, you know, help them. Can you imagine the humility that would take in a man? Just to stand there and tell your congregation that you've been preaching to for 28 years, that the whole thing had been a hoax, there was nothing to it, you didn't know. And now finally you knew, see. Because some young guy that some navigator got a hold of a few years ago went over there and sat down with him and explained to him how to be saved and how to know it. Isn't that a blessing? Isn't that fantastic? Well, needless to say, I preached to the staff for 3 days, but I went away blessed. I mean, it was just like being, you know, in a crowd where electricity is running back and forth. Because they'd look at each other and they'd, you know, they'd be reminded of something that happened over on Rhodey. And then they would blurt it out and explain it and tell about it. So, quite a time in Indonesia. And you want to pray for that crowd, by the way. Indonesia is not an easy place to work. It's, you know, like I say, one of the few mission fields we've got left. There's a young guy named there named Dan Garvin. Some of you know Dan. You want to pray for Dan. Dan's kind of a frail guy. He's not all that husky and tough. He's kind of a thin sort of a... We should have got him in a weightlifting program or something, you know, for a few years before he went over there. Because when I got there and talked to him, he had a spot on his lung, malaria, amoebic dysentery, and something else I think was bugging him at the time too, you know. I mean, you know, in these places in the world, you can get wiped out. I mean, really wiped out. I think Phyllis had the amoebic business. Carolyn, the whole side of her neck was all swollen up. So fortunately, Dave Campbell, the doctor in Australia, had given us a bunch of... We said, we're going to Indonesia. Indonesia! I mean, he came over with a pile of medicine, you know, and so we took it in and distributed it around a little bit with our staff. And so we were able to give her some antibiotics. And so she was... The next day it was down. But, you know, it's a tough place. So as the Lord brings it to mind, pray for Indonesia and pray for our staff there. And by the way, there's one of the sharpest young guys that I've ever met as a staff trainee over there. Kurt Rhodes. Is that right? Anybody know who I'm talking about? Is that it? Kurt Rhodes? That guy. Boy, pray for him. He has moved in there, has won the hearts of the people, has gotten the language. What a blessing he is. And there's another young fellow there, a black from down south. Lou Jackson. Doing a tremendous job. But they really need our prayers because it's not all that easy a place to work. So as you think about it, pray for Indonesia. From Indonesia, we went to Singapore. And, you know, some of you know Dave Dawson. So I land on, you know, get off the airplane and, you know, a month and a half, two and three times a day preaching. I'm not all that, you know, I mean, I'm getting kind of run down myself. And being in Indonesia, you know, with all that going on, I was kind of keyed up, so I landed in Singapore. So old Dave comes, and I says, now look, Leroy, I know that you've been at it, hitting it, so we get very light schedule. Very light schedule. He said, I've only got you scheduled for four major meetings in the conference. And on a weekend conference, the average navigator goes, what do you get? Two, you know, maybe three. So Dave had four, you know, just very light this time. I said, Dave, brother, you know, man, I am among you as he that serveth. You name it, I'm hot to do it. Well, he said, there was one other thing that I had in mind. The speakers, during the time that we're presenting the offering, we have the speakers all together for sort of a special speakers tea. Guys like Bishop Shandu Ray and others that they had in there, rather well-known Asian leaders. Somehow David collared all these guys to run workshops. And they're having a tea, so we want you to kind of go and explain the navigators and answer questions. Well, that takes more out of you than a message does, you know. So I said, great, great, man, that's terrific. That's only five, you know, what the fat, I can take it, you know. He said, well, there was one other thing that I was wondering, you know. After the last meeting, you know, about 9 o'clock at night, get the key people together, right, and have a little thing. So we had six meetings with them, you know, and that's about what I expected. That's what I was up for anyhow, so. Dave had planned this weekend conference. And I'm not going to try to explain to you how they run them there, but you can't run them like we do. They work at different times. But you get the same amount of meetings in on the weekend. And so David turned out a brochure. It was kind of a tough, hard-sell brochure. And they went to St. Andrew's School. St. Andrew's is an Episcopalian school. And the reason, by the way, we got in there was because, for one, it was something better to do. Some of the gang got up one day and decided to do a little serving, went over and served St. Andrew's School, painted the place and put up drapes and bought things for them, you know. And they don't have all that much money, so they just helped them. So now we needed a place to hold a one-day or a weekend conference, right? St. Andrew's School, welcome. Glad to have you use the place. You know, you cannot. There's no way you can go wrong by serving. There's no possible way. Just if you serve, you're in. There's just no way you can lose if you give yourself. Well, they were giving themselves. See, so now here we have St. Andrew's. The only problem is the auditorium only holds 600 people. That's all it holds. I mean, that is law. 700 people. We've got the 600 registrations. Big deal. That's what they're expecting. Then they got 700. Well, push the chairs a little closer. Then they got 800. Well, we'll, you know, get them a little closer. 900. Well, 1,000. Now, it almost killed Dave Dawson, but he had to start sending back registration money saying sorry. So I have no idea how many they'd have had they not cut it off at 1,000. And the people that came, of course, recognized the fact that they were very privileged to be there because many people who wanted to come couldn't. So they came with a sense of anticipation and eagerness, and here we jammed 1,000 people in this auditorium, supposed to hold 600 chairs, you know, everywhere you'd look, you know. It's so funny. You look out over the crowd, you know, everybody with beautiful coal black hair, everybody, except there's that Jay Pritchard, that fiery redhead, one redhead in the whole sea, you know. It really looks strange. This one red-headed guy, you know. By the way, what a blessing to be with Jay and Barb. Barb was so excited about Virginia's coming. I'll just tell you this because Virginia's not here. She was so excited about Virginia's coming that she went out and bought a new outfit for the baby. So she could come and present the baby to Virginia at the airport in a brand new outfit, you know. She said, it's almost like my mother's coming. She's so excited about the fact that Virginia. And Virginia had a fantastic ministry the whole way. Just sitting down, you know, and sharing her heart. And ministering in depth to these wives and these gals. That was quite a thing to see her do that. She had a phenomenal ministry. And all you have to do when you sit down with Virginia, you know, and when she starts opening up, you know, gets into the Psalms and so on, get a box of Kleenex and a Bible and you're in Fat City, you know, because it really works. It just, God really uses that woman's life. Well, Singapore, 1,000 people, big deal, you know, and turned on crowd. And you know how it is when you give a challenge to the Lordship of Christ and how the Spirit of God works and moves. And it was quite a time. Went from there to Malaysia. Malaysia had a week-long conference down on the Straits of Malacca, at the golden sands of the Straits of Malacca. Here's Virginia and Leroy Imes walking along holding hands on the golden sands of the Straits of Malacca. And we got tickled about it, you know. I told Virginia, this is a long ways from Neola, Iowa, you know. Here we are. Who would have ever thought of something like this? And see, when you're with them for a week, they begin to share things with you. Like, you know, I mean, I'm a member of First Presbyterian Church downtown. You know, cold, nice, solid, stable First Presbyterian Church, right? Right. I'm a Presbyterian by background, right? Right. So you sit down with some guy, you know, and he says, now, what do you do, Mr. Imes, when you're in your meeting and the demon takes possession of one of the members of the meeting? How do you handle that? Well, we don't handle that in the First Presbyterian Church, see? I mean, we don't handle that, right? What do you do when the demon comes over and takes possession of one of the members of your meeting when you're meeting together? And so on for a week. This was a very interesting week that we had there with this 145 people that came for this conference. We'd have had 180 some, but one school, Tom, he's a contact point down in Penang. Yeah, Tom, that's right. Thomas Chua. He could not come because his principal or his chancellor of the university or whatever it would be the equivalent changed the dates of that one school in all of Malaysia so it would be different. So they got left out. So the next week they're going down and have a meeting with 45 of that bunch, you know, so and kind of share the tapes and from this conference. But this was a special treat for me because when I'd gone through there in September, we'd raised money to give to Paul Hensley so that people could come in from Sumatra and Burma, right, and all that whole area, so they were able to send out a little money and bring these people in. So, you know, they introduced them as the dog eaters from Sumatra and the wild men from Borneo, and here's the Malaysians, and it was first time, by the way, that all these people had ever been together, and it was an exciting time. And just to think that our little gang, the American servicemen, had a part in providing the money, see, to provide for some of that. By the way, American servicemen get confused, and you got to help them. They think that money is to be spent on stereo equipment and speakers, and you know they don't know it's to give to missionaries, and so we're educating them over there a little bit. But I mentioned this demon thing. 3 o'clock in the morning, Paul Hensley, you know, the week before the conference, knock on the door. Come quick, demon's got my girlfriend. Well, Paul Hensley, you know, we led him to Christ in University of Nebraska, a young Methodist from back. Well, we don't do this in the Methodist Church in Nebraska, see? So what do? Well, okay, you get your Bible and you go out at 3 a.m., put on your pants and go down the street. And sure enough, here's this demon as this girl, you know. She's as stiff as this board. And so he started reading the Bible. And nothing happened. So he thought, Legion. So he said, how many are you, you know? Well, the demon answered, one. God is one. Well, right, you know, that's good theology. Thou believest there is one God? Who else believes that? The demons also believe and tremble, right? They know that. So that didn't work. So Paul thought for a while. He said, who are you? Turns out he's the monkey god. The monkey god, he says. So Paul knew we're not, you know, wrong god, so they got to do something. And the way the monkey god got into this girl was her mother, in hoping to get good luck, had given her soul over to the monkey god about 2 months before and had become a medium for the monkey god. And now the monkey god used the mother to transfer over one of his demons or something into this girl. And now we've got this thing going. So once Paul had figured out who it was, well, then, you know, he began to read the Bible and pray and talk to it. And finally, the girl was delivered. I mean, if you're going to go over, you know, and serve the Lord in the mission field in places like this, you've got to get ready for some interesting experiences, you know, and some stuff that goes on. Because it's not just sitting around, you know, giving the bridge and the B-ration to people. I mean, there's a lot involved when you get out into these exotic places of the world. Just an awful lot. I don't know if... Did Warren Myers give a report when he was here? I mean, they went into this monkey god temple in India. He and Jim North. And here's all these monkeys around, right? You know... Well, I mean, it is one of the tourist thing to go in and walk around the monkeys. That's one thing the tourists do, see? So they went in. Guess what? All the monkeys jumped on their back, tried to scratch them and bite them. Why? Children of God. Servants of Christ. The monkey god knows that, see? Oh, well, how'd they get on that? Well, anyhow, that was quite a time there in Malaysia, and that turned out real good. I had one day off in Malacca. By the way, I had one sick day, and that was my day off. But I wasn't really sick. I had a sore throat, and which good it came on my day off, you know, preaching two and three times a day. And the next day, it was gone. So when I went back. But in Malacca, Malacca is the oldest city that they've got around there. The old Roman Catholic missionary, the one that took Christianity to the Orient. St. Francis Xavier, right. That's where he landed. That's where his church is and his statue and everything is there. All the buildings, by the way, are painted, all the buildings that the Dutch had when they were there are painted red. A deep red. No one knows exactly why, but they think it's because the natives back in the 1500s when the Dutch were over there, whenever it was, they all chewed this stuff that made your spit red. The betel nut or whatever that stuff is. And they'd spit on these Dutch buildings. Well, the Dutch being a tidy folk, they didn't, so they painted everything red, you know, so it didn't kind of, so now there's all these red buildings. So we traveled around, saw some of the sites, and one of the things we did, we went into the oldest Chinese temple in Malaysia, or in Malacca at least. And now you think what you would feel like if you saw your mother down on her hands and knees with her face to the ground in front of sort of a boiling pot of kind of oil and flame and all kinds of weird deal on the altar here. And there they are, you know, these women. When we went in, there were two of them down there. And they were kind of groaning and pleading, you know, and then they would shake these sticks, a little can of sticks. And then they'd throw these sticks out. And they'd hope, you know. And other ones had cubes, wooden cubes with writing on them. They'd throw these out and they would look at them. You could see that desperate hope that somehow some good omen or sign would result from that. I mean, that's the world, see. That is so much of the world. I mean, there it all is out there. People just in desperate, desperate need of Christ. I mean, women on their face before some pot up here boiling and men writing out sins, trying to figure out some way to get their sins gone. You know, and of course there is no way and they know that. And what do you and I take for granted? The assurance of salvation. We take that for granted. That's why I preached on that, by the way, at Honolulu on the first stop. See, we take that. I guarantee that when you got up this morning, you didn't even think about it. You never gave the fact that you're saved. You have the assurance of your salvation. You never gave that fact a second thought. We don't. We take that for granted, right? Well, how much is our soul worth? Well, who knows? How much will the profit of man gain the whole world and lose his own soul? It's worth more than the world. We know that. How much is our body worth? Like on the open market, just the chemicals. You know, well, $2 probably, you know, inflation and all. Might be worth $2. Some of you guys, you know, you run, you stay in shape, you know, and you're tough. You think you're bone and muscle. You're 70% water. You're a bag of water is what you are. I mean. So you got this physical bag of water that you're sloshing around in for a few years, you know. Not long. One vapor is all it's going to last. Worth about, you know, $1.50, $2. And I'll guarantee you that then when the last month or so, or maybe today, or maybe last week, you've done some worrying about it. You know, can God provide this, or will God provide this, or is God able to do this, or what about this? See, our temporal existence, we give a lot of thought to that. Worth $2. Bag of water. We wonder about it. We don't give that much thought to our eternal soul. It's saved. It's in God's hands. Praise the Lord. That ends it. Right? That's where we are. But this, you know, bag of water that we run around in, worth a couple bucks, that occupies our thoughts. Occupies our mind. We wonder how, what's going to happen here, and can God do this, or will this happen, or what's going to happen to me, or what about my future? See, and we got one vapor, and it's all over, and our soul worth more than the whole world going to last, you know, throughout eternity. as if somehow God is more capable of taking care of an eternal soul than he is a $2 bag of water, you know. We're kind of funny people, really, aren't we? I mean, we're really kind of funny the way we think. As if this one's worth so much and the other one's hardly worth even thinking about. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, anyhow, let me see what else I got down here. Well, that's enough. I would encourage you to pray for Paul Hensley, Paul and Margaret. There's no staff training there with them. You know, there's no American fellowship with them. And, you know, it's just different being there. And they would enjoy that. They don't need it, but they would enjoy it. But they're sort of alone, and they would appreciate, I know, special prayers from us. Pray for Jim North and the crowd that's in there with him. By the way, that was kind of a treat, the way the Lord worked out. I hadn't planned it. But we went to Indonesia, Singapore, and Malaysia. Well, Indonesia, you know, there's Jim North heading up the work. Kid that lived in our basement back in Lincoln. You know, we were heading up the work there, and some guy we recruited and got started from the time he was but a youth. Then went into Singapore. Well, Dave Dawson, you know, we got a hold of him when he was in the Air Force in Lincoln, just a young troop, had known the Lord, I think, a week when we met him, and spent 18 months with him. Bob going down there every week, I guess, meeting in Bible study with Dave, and we sort of got him on his feet, got him started. Paul Hensley led him to Christ. We were around there in Lincoln, you know, at the university. So here they are, heading up three different, I mean, directors of countries. People often say to me, you know, in light of some of the things that happened to us over the years, do you think it's really been worth it, Leroy? You think the thing is really worth it? Man, worth it. I'll tell you it's worth it when you can get out and see young guys like this who are making a mark for God in this world. And that is a thrill. So it was a personal thrill just for us. And I can hardly wait to see Patty Lovelace, because here is Joanne Ray. In Okinawa, here is young Bobby Stockton, Bobby Riddle, when she lived here. And in Japan, we talked to Diane Kirsten. Three gals lived in her home down, you know, when she had one of the homes here in town, girls' apartment. And now there they are out there serving the Lord, making a mark for God in some of the exotic places of the world. It's worth it, you know. That which we're involved in, see, is worth it. And one of my prayers, see, is that somehow or another, God will enable us, those of us who labor back in here, to understand why we're doing what we're doing. See, if you can just figure out why you lick all those stamps, if you lick stamps anymore, or why you write all those letters, or why you punch all those cards, or why why do you do that? If you can somehow understand why it is we're doing what we're doing back here, and how it relates specifically to what's going on out there, I think it'll make our job a little more interesting, make what we're doing a little more meaningful, see. But we got to keep, you know, reminded of that. Why am I doing that? And if we can understand that, it'll add a little more, a greater dimension to what we're doing. Well, let's have a word of prayer.